Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome again to 4020 Live. It is Monday the 27th of March, just to prove it is live. It is?
It is.
There's daylight. It's summertime. There's a blackbird on the window. You're supposed to sleep then.
I don't know, as long as it's not...
There's two of them. Oh, there's three of them now. What's the... if they leave the roof, does the empire collapse?
All I know is magpies. Two. One's not good,
one
but two's
for sorrow,
right.
Two for joy, three for a girl, four for a boy. That's what Tommy Boyd taught me. Welcome to the programme. Rugby League talk between now and whenever we finish, which is another exciting week in which... I felt very old because all the headlines about Mike Ford being involved in the ownership of Oldham spoke about his son. Well, I remember him as a player, of course. Phil's even older because now Jimmy Peacock's son is playing.
Hello.
Are you going to get the rights to write his book? Buy them now. Get in early.
It just makes you feel old, doesn't it? But I think overall been quite a good week. The Oldham story's a good one. I don't know whether how much of that is down to, again, IMG... bringing in new criteria and clubs looking at themselves and saying, this is what we need to do. So moving to Boundary Park, or back to Boundary Park, great. New ownership, talking about pulling in some of the famous people from Oldham who played the game as coaches. A bit of a feel-good factor. They won yesterday, which they may well have done anyway, but I think that's been a good news story. Cornwall winning their first home game. Good viewing figures for Channel 4 again. And I think we were just talking about it, that we mentioned on the show last week that perhaps there'd been a slight dip from the first couple of weeks and back on an upward curve.
Yeah, I thought there were some good games at the weekend, entertaining. In particular, I thought the Wigan game was probably one of the highest quality games and entertaining games I've seen this year. And, you know, I thought the Leeds game, perhaps not quite as good in terms of quality, but for entertainment, it kind of had everything, didn't it? Had plenty of points, unlike Thursday and Friday, which I think as a neutral and probably a less of a rugby league fan that you're appealing to on terrestrial TV, I think that helps. And the score switched. People would have switched off at half time and then, you know, tuned in the last few minutes and were surprised by the result. In fact, I watched the first half and then couldn't watch the second half, so I had to catch up with that. And I'd seen the result when I watched the second half. But it didn't spoil the entertainment. No. I thought it was a really good game.
I thought the other thing about that was it was enhanced by the atmosphere in the stadium. And to get, again, over 14,000 fans in when you're not relying on away supporters, some offers to get people there who might not have normally gone, a different kick-off time on a lunchtime on a Saturday, just that all lent to it. And again, you know, you can have the best game, but if nobody's cheering... It's not quite the same as a crowd getting so heavily invested.
I agree. And it lent to everything. When I tuned in at 12:45, I thought, oh no, it's going to be... there's hardly anybody in that north stand.
They were all having their brunch.
They all filtered through from the corporate areas.
The food was too good.
The prawn sandwich brigade.
Yes,
as Roy King would call them.
Absolutely.
So we'll start with Leeds then, because they beat Catalans. So Catalans' unbeaten run at the start of the season is over, which means that Warrington, it is their year, as some people have probably already written today or over the weekend, because they are still unbeaten. But
although they are going to lose a player.
They are going to lose a player, but it's still their year for now. They are the world champions as well, which we'll come to in a bit. But Leeds, as former world champions, having been deposed last week by Castleford, just shows the topsy-turvy nature of Super League this season, and generally in the past few years. And also, for the people who say, well, the championship's so unpredictable. Yeah, but so Super League as well. Old sport is unpredictable. What a comeback, again, in the second half from Leeds. Rowan Smith, so obviously in the first half he's the worst coach ever, and in the second half he's great again.
Clearly the first half there was an issue because they didn't have a captain and did short kick-offs. But the second half, that didn't matter. I think they won it during the period when Harry Newman was in the sin bin. It's not often when a team goes down to 12 men that they'll score 8 unanswered points, and that just seemed to lift everything. Again, just some key performers. Like Blake Austin's individual performance was as good as I've seen in a lead shirt. But then you look at the stats afterwards, and he was involved in absolutely everything. You know, 5 of the tries, but also hell of a lot of running meters, which was great. Jared O'Connor, really impressive. You know, a week that's gone by saying there's extra pressure on you because Cruz Lehman's going to be leaving. Corey Johnson makes a start, had a very good 15 minutes as well. But it was a little bit about Harry Newman, I think. You know, we've got an England team being picked in the next couple of weeks for the international against France. You know, he's trying his hardest to make up for not having been in a World Cup team. Scores 2 tries. The second one was a fantastic breakout effort at the end. But also managed to get Simbind as well with a little bit of attitude. I don't really mind that. I think the best players have always got something about them. But is it a fine line between abusing a referee and being caught up in the moment and over enthusiastic and passionate about what you're saying?
I think it probably comes with maturity as a player, doesn't it? He's still young, he's still relatively inexperienced. I think he'll probably learn there's a way in which he can express his frustrations that doesn't lead him to being put in the sin bin. I believe he'd had it a go in the first half. I don't think that was the first time that had happened in the game, and I suspect that's probably why Liam Moore's patience ran a little bit thin at that stage. Albeit, having said that, I think he had Harry Newman had a point that for me the first offence was caused by Catalan by putting him in the ruck. And actually, I think if Liam had his time again, he may have waved play on because the first offence was by Catalan. They'd got to play the ball away. Yes, it had hit Newman, but if Catalan could pick the ball up and play on, then I think that might have avoided it. That said, that doesn't excuse Harry's reaction. And you know, Liam, particularly with what may have gone on in the first half, obviously felt that, you know, that was the opportunity to put him in the sin bin. And as much as anything, because we don't know what was said, do we? But
no. But
you can visually see his response. And that is as bad in some ways from a referee's perspective, because that's visually undermining your authority. So, you know, yeah, I think with maturity, he'll probably learn to deal with those situations differently.
Well, I had a ban after getting sin-binned at St Helens last year for similar offence.
Yeah, that was worse.
He's got to learn. He's clearly still in that learning process. £250 fine and no ban. About right, appropriate, what do you think?
Well, it's in line with, obviously, with the changes that Match Review Panel made. To be honest, I think it probably is appropriate for that. You know, in terms of what we've seen of dissent, it wasn't the one of the worst examples, and it wasn't anywhere near what we saw last year where he was protesting with, I think it was Tom Grant who refereed, wasn't he? He was referring something to the video referee, and that was dreadful. That was sort of looked a little bit like football. So yeah, it wasn't as bad as that, and the way that Match Review Panel have gone, no game and a fine, it lays down a marker, doesn't it?
I was going to mention football because obviously would you ever want to referee in a Premier League? Because they just seem to be completely out of control, players. And I'm not turning this into all footballers are evil and all rugby players are saints, because we know they aren't. But it does seem that the sport, not just the referees, but the FA, the Premier League, they don't want to give out bans to players for even pushing referees, as we've seen in recent weeks, which is just beyond daft.
Yeah, I don't know what that player got, if that's been sanctioned yet.
I don't think he's been...
But that was terrible. I mean, I don't know where you start with football. It's such a huge issue. But ultimately, the governing bodies of that sport have to come together and agree that proper sanctions are going to be given. You know, and finding a player in the Premier League £250 yeah. clearly is not the answer, is it? £250,000 maybe, but not £250. You know, but you know, for me, in the Premier League, it has to be about putting players on the up in the stand. But what you then have is what we've had in Super League probably last year, where expensive players are being paid to sit in the stand. Club owners are not going to tolerate that, so. They've got to find a balance, haven't they? But for me, you know, I saw an example today on social media where there's somebody on a park field, a football park field, having to go to a referee, and somebody's filmed it on their phone or whatever. And once he realises he's being filmed, he stops doing it. Well, he shouldn't be doing it in the first place, should he?
No.
And whether football needs to go down the route of cameras like Rugby League have done in the National Conference League and the Community Game, Rugby League's been really proactive in that, in rolling out this season lots of sort of referee cameras. Now, clearly, you're not going to do that in the Premier League, but at community level in football, I think that could be the way to go.
There's a great documentary where the former RFL president, Mr. Tony Adams, is having great discussions with David Ellery in the past. It's worth seeking out.
But that's an important one, because that was a test, I think, or it was a one-off game, wasn't it, where they put a microphone on the referee. Now, the referees have microphones on them in the Premier League, but it's not broadcast. And I think if you did broadcast it, then that might be the reason for the FA to then step in and take action, because you can't have that going out.
What about a sin bin, though? Does football need to introduce a sin bin? Because, again, if you were to lose a player for 10 minutes, that might have in a game where you could only have one goal that decides it, that could be quite significant.
And maybe that might be the answer, because you're not putting somebody in the back of the stand for a number of weeks, are you? But you're removing a player for a period of time. So, yeah, that should be something they should look at.
So viewing figures for Channel 4, we believe, were 400,000 for that game, which, again, international football weekend, you're probably going to pick up some neutrals. And I think that's what came over, that if this is your first time watching the sport, there was enough there that you'd come back and watch it again. As you say, you know, you can. How do you measure quality? I think everybody that watched that was captivated. You know, there was controversy about should or should Mitchell Pearce's try have been allowed. I don't know if we saw enough angles to have a view on that in, you know, real time in the ground. Looked as though. And I think even Sam Tompkins said it at half-time that had it been given the other way, very few people would have complained. But you had that. You had the tackle by Tetivano on Mike McMeekin, which was replayed loads of times on social media. And you ended with a length of the field try. It virtually had... It felt like this is a great advert for what we are.
I agree, and it had the weather, didn't it? It had the sunshine, which I think always helps.
It does help. And that lunch... It's funny, talking to some of the players afterwards, they felt different playing at a lunchtime on a Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the same as being on a wet ground on a Friday night, you know, on the lights that probably aren't to specification. It felt like more of an occasion.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, in terms of the Pearce try, it was a difficult decision, there's no doubt about that. Yeah. And I think without the live call, it probably becomes even more difficult.
Yeah.
Because there's no direction from the on-field. It went up as no try. So, for me, I think given it was a difficult decision, and you could probably argue the merits either way, having said that, I was more on the side of no try than try. And given the live call of no try, I think... I would imagine in the group review today they would have obviously discussed that and they would have come to a conclusion whether it was right or wrong. I would have suggested that staying with the live call of no try would have probably been the right outcome, because you're allowed to make a second movement, but in the policy it talks about if the momentum of the tackle takes him into the in-goal area anyway, then that second movement becomes irrelevant. Mm. Well, his body never ended up in the in-goal area. It was always in the field of play. Now, you might argue that's because he had a tackler on him pulling him back and the second movement was created by momentum. But for me, it's just all too technical. For me, it was no try.
Liam Moore obviously got the moment of the match, didn't he, for having to go at Reece Martin's goal kicking.
Yes, which again tells you the humour.
Did he get a £250 fine for that? That's abusing a player.
It's brilliant, because again, it shows that, you know, we do have that level of humour and humanity between the match officials and the players. And Again, Reece Martin's reaction when he kicked a goal, having missed five on the trot, which is something he's ever done in his career before.
Having kicked 700 in a row.
It was brilliant. Year. And you know, again, I think there are some coaches that might have had a word with Harry Newman about his try celebrations, because there's always a chance you're going to drop the ball and make yourself look foolish. But in the context of that game and that time and the crowd, it all seemed to be part of that entertainment principle. Yeah. So
I mean, I saw somebody's tweet about that comment that Liam had made to Reece, and that's somebody that just doesn't understand refereeing, that doesn't understand game management. That's just a light-hearted remark.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say that if it was, you wouldn't be taking the mickey if they were 50-0 down or something.
No, I think you've got to try and, as a referee, put across a bit of personality, and hopefully that's met with a good response either way. You pick your moments and you pick your players.
Yeah. So that, I thought that was great. Everything about it, obviously, unless you're Catalan wanting to defend your unbeaten record. But I thought Steve McNamara was brilliant in the press conference. They had three really significant players who suffered injuries. I thought particularly Ben Garcia doesn't get the credit he deserves, but his post-contact meters are absolutely unbelievable. And for him to go off, as well as Tyrone May in particular, was having a real influence on the game. Goudemont never really got started. I think, you know, he could have said, "Oh, we had three players; our bench was down to one," but he didn't. He was honest and said, "You know, the speed of the ruck hurt us in the second half, and that's why we lost." So, for me, there were really no losers, and the television audience were the biggest winners.
I mean, definitely to Brian Smith, of course, and I love Ron Smith; he's great. He gives people plenty of stories, such as Jared O'Connor playing for the name on the front of his shirt rather than the back of it. And I'd already done a shirt downstairs, which I can't repeat because I won't get the same reaction. But it was Leeds Building Society was the punchline. But at least it...
You did.
It was a pointed remark, though, wasn't it? I picked up on that. Yeah, it was a pointed remark, that one.
I think
it's all about the team.
I don't know who is advising Cruz Leeming, and I don't know where he'll eventually end up. And it may well be that he feels personally he's in a better place because of all this. But where we sit at the moment, you would imagine if he was watching on his sofa on Saturday, he might be ringing his agent going, "I think we could have made a mistake here."
Well, he won't be in the England squad, will he?
No.
When's that now?
But Jared O'Connor might.
He might. Falling in his... Was he still playing for England?
Played for Ireland as well.
Everyone plays for everyone, don't they?
Yeah. But I think the way he's reinvented himself and the 65 minutes that he played, another excellent performance.
And wasn't it heartwarming to see the classically trained dancer celebrating their team's victory in front of the centre stand and Danny Caprino as well? Thank you very much indeed. We'll see you next week, won't we? We'll be live in Leeds next week. I say live. I mean, we're in Leeds now, but you know, it's a different part of Leeds. We'll tell you more about that later. Leeds win, so that's exciting. 14,320 when it looked great on the telly. They're doing stuff for the game, the doubleheader in a couple of weeks as well, so again, hopefully that's another big crowd. Although it's on Sky, so it's not as important. But again, hopefully the same thing happens on Saturday. Warrington versus Hull, big crowd at the Halliwell Johns for a game on TV, because that is the biggest window we've got. The game's on Channel 4, the game's on the BBC. To the people out in the real world. Tony's asked if we have any idea what the Sky viewing figures are. No. Because they've hidden it on the Barb website. You can't find out for free anymore. So
we do know that a decent figure for a Sky game on any Friday night is around about 200,000. So roughly the Channel 4 figure was double that.
And we got a mention on the Italy-England game.
That's
Thursday
as well.
A little bit at the bottom saying Super League's coming on, so... Cross promotion. So I didn't hear what they said because I was working at the time, but I saw it on the bottom of the screen, so that's the important thing. Let's go back to Thursday then, when the weekend started with Huddersfield versus St Helens. Didn't seem the most exciting of games in terms of the scoreline, but I'm sure it was probably more exciting than they were making it out to be. 14 points to 12, Saints won it in the first half. Ashton Golding's really good. I like him. And he's on the Super League show tonight. Saints are grinding wins out, which is exactly what champion teams do when they're not quite flying on all cylinders. That's not there. Right.
Have you mixed the metaphor?
Firing on all wings. That's what they're not doing at the minute.
I'd have to say that I thought that was a really enjoyable game, a very intense game, defence orientated clearly. But for this stage of the season, if that had been an NRL game, we'd have all been marvelling about how good the defence was, how disciplined Saints were. The interesting comments afterwards were made by some of the television pundits as to, you know, were Saints cheating for manipulating the ruck to their advantage, deliberately giving away some set restarts on the first tackle, meaning they were defending seven, or they were prepared to defend a second set, or possibly even a third, because they believe in their defence. Is that pushing the rule to the limit? But isn't that what teams do if they're good enough to?
Yeah, they do. I mean, they weren't the only team last year that we picked up on that as a group, that, you know, teams were willing to concede set restarts early in tackle counts, particularly in yardage. And that's not always an easy trend to identify as a referee as the game goes along across 80 minutes. What tackle and what area of the field they're giving away. There's so many things to remember, by the way. So it might seem on the face of it quite easy to recognise when you're sat in the stand, but running around a field with your heart rate going as well, and lots of other decisions at part of you know, playing its part, that's not always easy. But, you know, clearly the NRL made changes, didn't they, the other year. And it's perhaps surprising that the RFL didn't follow, because we usually do. In giving penalties for ruck interference, you know, 0 to 40 metres, basically.
Which again goes back to the Catalan try when Reece Martin gets given the set restart and then he's driven back. Yeah. It's his fault that he releases the ball, but Leeds have actually been penalised for being given a set restart.
Yeah, I think that's strong, and I saw some other tweets on that. I think that's strong because ultimately, you know, yeah, if it was a penalty, Leeds would have had the opportunity to kick and get out of that. Yeah. I understand that. But they don't under the current situation.
No.
Under the current situation, he didn't have to force the pass. The attacker should have gone to ground and surrendered. So there are ways around it. But I do take the point that actually, you know, in old money, he would have had a penalty and they'd have kicked their way out of it. For me, I think it has to change. I think we have to go that way. It's another, by the way, it's another added level of complication for a referee.
Absolutely.
Because you've got to then recognise whereabouts are you on the field. You know, is it a 20-40 kick? Is it a 40-20 kick? Am I inside the 40 in terms of am I giving a penalty or am I giving a set restart? So, you know, again, it's another change of referees. But I think that has to be the way the game goes, to be honest, because the only measure the referee has against teams repeatedly infringing early in tackle counts or in yardage is to put somebody in the sin bin. And that will be being discussed and they will consider that. But to do it on the back of one decision, you're never going to do that. So that's what, you know, Leeds would have benefited from in that situation, having a penalty to be able to kick themselves out of that position there.
And in a narrow game, Huddersfield might have won that game with a couple of penalties rather than...
But I would still maintain the set restart for me has its place and it has its merit because it keeps the game flowing. And I don't think we would want to go back to days of giving penalties all the time, because then you're going back to the reason why set restarts were first brought in the first place, which was to create that flow. And then, you know, there was one in the Leeds game where Julian Busquet gave one away on the fifth tackle, and you could see his body language as soon as he gave it away, and it was a blindingly obvious set restart. He clearly held on far too long on what was a win, effectively. So the Leeds player had got himself on the front, landed on his front and head through the tackle. He'd clearly won that tackle and earned the right to play the ball, and Busquet wanted to slow it down, and you could see his body language when Liam waved six again on the fifth tackle. He was just deflated because they then had to defend without that break of a penalty kick to touch to where you can recover. He had to defend again, and that's why a set restart is good. So people who are talking about getting rid of set restarts, for me, that's totally wrong. But I think there are grounds to go down the NRL route, and that's not just because it's the NRL. It's because it has some merit.
I think the big stat to come out of the game was Matty Lees, 68 tackles in 80 minutes.
Yeah, impressive.
Unbelievable. You know, that is, again, England form, if we're talking about...
I was saying, it's that Scottish Rugby Union commentator. Lovely.
68 in a year.
Yeah.
But phenomenal effort. And because the Saints were prepared to defend that way, that's why they came out on top. And as you say, you know, for Huddersfield, it must be a little bit deflating because they know they're getting there. They know they are competing with the top teams. But that's two games running at home where they've lost by the same margin. And they've got to nick one of those soon. to be genuine contenders. But yes. You know.
But who have Huddersfield played so far? They've certainly played Warrington at home and
Warrington
lost.
Warrington at home.
They played St Helens at home and lost.
Wigan at home and lost.
So, you know, if you're looking at the teams that are regularly, exception of Warrington last year, but are regularly up there towards the top end of the table, then you'd have to say that, you know, they've played some of the better sides.
But they need to knock one off.
They do.
For their own...
One concern I'd have is how many points have they scored? I'd be interested to see what the points difference is on the table, because I don't think they've scored an awful lot of points. No. The only one, was it 8-0 at Wakefield?
84 points they've scored and 60 conceded.
Yeah.
They are the only team in the bottom half of the table with positive points difference, though.
Defensively
a really good side. They are defensively a really good side.
It is about how... And even in the last 3 or 4 minutes when they were within 2 points, they couldn't create anything.
Well, they're a fairly conservative... They play in a fairly conservative way because their terms out, certainly was last year, and I would imagine it'll be the same again, that, you know, Ian Watson talks about trusting in the process. The process must be that you complete your sets, which is...
Put pressure on a little bit, boring.
But
you've
if
also
I'm honest,
got to score.
But you do have to score. You've got to create something and not necessarily just rely on your last player.
And I get that they've got Lollar here and Farsh to come back, which will help that. But Jake Connor coming in was quite rightly lauded and heralded in his second debut. And again, another great news story. But it didn't change that way that they play. It's going to be very interesting to see how, when he's fully fit and playing 80 minutes, A, where he plays, and B, how he can have an impact on that area where clearly, you know, I think Will Price is probably the most likely to create a score. He's not going to be there next year. So knowing Ian Watson, he's probably not going to trust everything to go through Will Price this year because it won't be there next year.
But if two of your key playmakers are out and your other one in Connor's just come back from a long
time. It's why they're not scoring.
I think so.
But they do have to let the shackles off every now and again.
Yeah.
Cheating. Mark Winstanley. I have made complaints to Sky, the RFL and Super League, but only Sky have replied with a half-hearted answer. It wasn't John Wilkin then, because he never condoned it. But
I don't think it's cheating. I think every team with every coach has always tried to push the limits of whatever the laws is to suit their team. The one thing about St Helens is they are incredibly fit. They're ridiculously disciplined in terms of how they play with each other. It might not be disciplined in terms of how many penalties they give away. They know exactly what they're doing and that it isn't that much of a risk to give away another set of six on their own line because they're so good at defending it.
Yeah, they are prepared to concede set restarts. Now, as a referee, if you feel as though you're giving too many or in a short space of time and it's a tactic, then they will go to the sin bin. So that's the consequence. But they are prepared to do that because they know they can defend because they're fit. But you know that's the nature of sport, isn't it? You've got to push the boundaries and see how far those boundaries can be pushed before you face the consequences of it.
Badger saying something funny about Jake Connor being overhyped by Sky. No comments. If you were to give me now £5 mythical and say the grand finals between St Helens and Warrington, who's going to win? I know exactly where I put that £5, and I know exactly who the bookmakers will make favourites. We'll come on to Warrington in a moment.
I think we said it the other week, that the interesting test for Warrington will be when this initial wave of enthusiasm, excitement and victory, they suffer a defeat or they have a couple of injuries. Thomas McKayley looks like it's going to be his last game. He's going back to the NRL. That may not disrupt them because they've still got Josh Maguire to come in. But the thing about that is you're starting to disrupt what has been a winning formula. So let's see how it goes. Josh Drinkwater didn't play this week and they still won convincingly. So that's a really good sign for Warrington.
The concern is, and the crowd at Keighley is an outlier for many and various reasons against Bradford. I'm not saying that's not a great thing that they've achieved, because obviously it is. But that was a higher crowd than Huddersfield got against St Helens on Thursday night. It was higher than Wakefield had against Hull Kingston Rovers on Friday night. I know Wakefield haven't won a game and Hull KR do travel well. But that's going to be a concern that two clubs, and especially Huddersfield, who are up at the top end of the table or have been in recent years, and you can throw Salford into the mix as well, two successful clubs in the last few years and Wakefield, being beaten out by a team who's only just been promoted from League One. And I know there are reasons for the attendance this week at Keighley, but still, on bare facts and numbers, I'm not sure what those clubs can do to get people in. Huddersfield have tried the giveaway tickets for nothing and it doesn't work because as soon as you put them back up, people don't come and watch. Wakefield, they're trying to get a new stand. Well, they are building a new stand. And I'm not sure what Salford can do because they have been up there in the last few years. It's how do we get people to come and watch rugby league who aren't watching at the minute?
Well, Keith's attendance was on the back of being on 40-20 live.
Of course, absolutely.
So all Huddersfield and Wakefield need to do is ring up and come on, yeah. That's all.
Michael, well, you know, in terms of the Keighley game, it's the first time they've played Bradford in, what, how many years in a competitive fixture? So, you know, at Keighley as well, which would have...
It's the first time they've ever beaten in Bradford's history.
Yeah, the current Bradford, yeah. Mm. But did it go back to virtually the Second World War since...
No, apparently it's the 70s. The initial stat that came out of the 40s or whenever, someone found the game in 1973 where they won 3-2 at Oxford.
Right.
Must have been a great game. But the Premier League was great in
was
the 70s.
Was that a league game or a cup game?
Apparently a league game, well, yeah.
So, anyway,
it's a long time. It's a long time. Well done, Keighley.
I have some sympathy with the likes of Huddersfield because I think, as you say, that what more can they do other than be a successful team? Well, what more they probably can do, and I know they are trying to do, and I don't know how easy it is to do, is sell the game in the schools, have a foundation that goes out there in the community. There aren't that many amateur teams that play directly in the Huddersfield area, and the ones that there are linked in with the club. Yeah. But it's not like you've got, you know, 70 community clubs around you, because you start to move into Halifax territory. So although Siddall isn't that far away, it isn't a Huddersfield club.
I mean, I don't know traditionally whether Huddersfield ever had big crowds.
They did it with a team of all talents around about the First World War.
Yeah, well, you know, I definitely wasn't alive then. But this is what I'm trying to get to, is that, you know, Salford have always, I think, traditionally had crowds that have, you know, been lower than other clubs. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was listening to somebody the other day and they were sort of saying, even when in their heyday at the Willows with the Willows Variety Club on that.
9,000 on a Friday night was massive.
And it was a Thursday night in Huddersfield, which is not going to be an easy night on a school night to get school kids.
With England playing.
Yeah, but I think it goes back to what we were talking about last week, in that there's got to be more than just the 80 minutes. There has to be a package to attract somebody to go to. And I think, you know, at Hull KR, that's what you see with the Craven Street there. There's something to go to in advance of the game. Something to eat, something to drink, and actually to stay to after the game. And I think that's what Keithy would say as well, that's what they try to do, is build more around the game than just the 80 minutes itself.
If you haven't watched what Brian Bevan said, spin-off series Tackle Bags, where Dennis goes to all these grounds around the country. He's been to Cornwall, he's been to watch a rugby union game at Exeter. I think he had to take a mortgage out to go there. He went to Hull KR and enjoyed Craven Street. I think it was at Castle. I'm looking forward to the Cass episode coming up, so... Just have a watch. See what other clubs are doing. Cornwall, of course, the fans were all those cardboard cutouts that Eric Perez has had shipped over from Toronto, as we discovered last week.
But clubs like Salford and Wakefield and Huddersfield will be sharing ideas with other Super League clubs and other successful clubs and other sports if they've got something about
them. It's about having the resource and allocating something to...
But Huddersfield aren't short of resource. They've got Ken David there to support that. But you can't just make your season ticket cheap and expect people to come. That is one factor, but
I mean,
somebody was talking today to me about a women's football game in Wrexham, I think it was.
Oh, they had 9,000 people.
Over 9,000 people. Yeah, appreciate they were apparently selling tickets for £1, and it was, I think they were winning a trophy or something. But I was astounded when they said that. I mean, that's as many as I think Wrexham Football Club now gets.
It's a feel-good factor around what's happening in Wrexham, and it's tapping into that. But I do think as well that the crowd on Saturday felt young, so again helps that it's a Saturday lunchtime, there's no school, you can take your kids. But I think if you incentivise around the next generation, that's possibly what Huddersfield and Wakefield and maybe Salford haven't quite conquered yet. I don't know how you do it. It's easy to sit and
Wakefield have often had junior players at half time on pre-game and things like that. I think that has its place. I don't know if Huddersfield do that. Leeds certainly do that. And you get the parents going along, you get the children going along,
they want to go again after they've had that experience.
I think
Huddersfield do need to be more expansive.
Yeah.
As indeed, it won't come as a shock to Ian Watson if he is tuning in. I think he probably does know.
Well, what's his name usually, doesn't he? The old coach, Simon. What's he called? Before Ian Watson,
Rick Stan.
After Rick Stan.
After Rick Stan.
Sorry, Simon, if you're still watching, you will still be watching. Aussie fella.
Yes.
Yeah.
Him.
Someone will tell me. I don't know the coach's name is these days, let alone anyone else. Anyway, Mark says, Phil Clark has brought the game into disrepute. Well, he's cheating.
Yeah, that's not news,
he should be reprimanded for it.
Oh, sorry.
He should make a full apology on Sky. Badger Badger says, we'd have Phil Clark apologising every day if he had to apologise for bringing the game into disrepute.
The thing is, that's what pundits are there to do, isn't it?
I apologise for what I maybe I missed that comment. What was his comment?
Just saying Saints were cheating.
Walford. Simon Walford. Thanks, Thank Badger
you.
Badger.
Thank you.
The crowd at Wigan don't look good too. Maybe that's because they're from Wigan, says Carsten. Hi, Carsten. How's Switzerland today? Huddersfield need to promote better. They've only just come back on YouTube, says Tony. And he also says Lee's rebrand is working. Could get over 9,000 on Thursday night. Looking forward to this one. I think I'm at work for it. But oh, no, I'm not. I'm at Feth. Lee bouncing off the win at Hull, who are... I know I've jumped over Friday. We'll come back to Friday in a minute. But you mentioned Lee. 16 winners at Hull. You can't stop this leopard bounce at the minute. Where are they now in the table? Far away from the bottom. They've won three of their six games.
I think if you just said after six rounds, and we've said it before, that ideally a league table probably shouldn't come out until after about five or six rounds as you're running up to Easter, because it gives you a chance to have a more reasoned overview of how teams are playing. If you'd have said that after six games Lee would have won half of them, and that there were other teams below them that now, even if they lose to them home and away, they're still not going to get above Lee, that is an astonishing start to the season.
But including St Helens at home and Hull away is never an easy game. So.
Well, especially after Hull played so well against St Helens the week before.
Yeah.
No, clearly there's something about this Lee team, and it's very experienced, and yes, at the moment it's not really suffering from injuries, and it will test the depth of the squad when they do. But they came up with a sense of purpose, and for all of the stuff that we might shudder when we hear Derek Beaumont doing it, it's buying, isn't it? It's going back to what we've said about a feel-good factor around Wrexham. There's one around Lee.
I think it's great.
However he's done it.
I think it's exactly what the sport needs, though. It needs people to talk about it. Yeah, okay, I know there was criticism as to whether he was talking to just rugby league people and not people outside the sport. But people are talking about it. And it's clearly working. Because whether that's unified them as a set of players against other teams or other clubs, I'm not sure, or the response externally to the colours that they're now wearing, or the patterns that they're now wearing on the shirts. But the fans must have bought into it. And, you know, with good performances and wins, it only serves to reinforce it.
It goes back to what you were saying about making it an occasion. People now want to go and see a game at Lee because...
But people are waiting to know which band is on next. I mean, I don't know the band. Was it this week? Is
the lottery winners?
That's it. Yeah.
But again, the thing was, I said after round one, it's not about round one. It's about two, three, four, and they're doing it. They are doing something every week,
and they've got a hugely marketable game this week against their rivals in the borough. The Battle of the Borough. And if that game had come on in week seven, and Lee were 0-6 and Wigan were 6-6, it wouldn't have had all of that riding on it. They've got almost a perfect storm. They're playing really well. They can knock their big brother off. There's pre-match entertainment. There's the feel-good factor. Why wouldn't you want to go if you were in the area? I think that probably could be the game of the weekend.
Yeah, potentially. And I think my understanding is that Lee started their women's team this weekend.
Yeah.
So positive steps, I think.
Yeah, and they've got a good ground in terms of modern amenities. I think it is exactly what the sport needs. It really doesn't help Wakefield or, in some respects, Castleford, but it's a great story. And that win at Hull is really big. Clearly, we need to talk about what may or may not be going on at Hull, and the role now that Tony Smith has in not just taking on a club with potential, but one that isn't already in six games fulfilling that potential. But that's a big win. Hull were humiliated, then went to St Helens and got some of their self-respect back. They then go home where they've got to put in a performance to reinvigorate those home fans that were so disappointed by that Salford game. And Lee beat them and were 16-0 up early on, and were in total control of that game all the way through it, listening to the radio commentary, which... That can only be full credit to Lee.
Absolutely, but I think, it goes back to what I said last week, that for me, and you're asking probably a lot here for Hull FC fans to be patient, because they probably feel they've been patient for a number of years, But when you bring in a new coach, you can't expect him to work wonders overnight. And I think he probably realises he's got a job on his hands, hasn't he? He's got a squad, as we talked about last week, where the majority of the squad, their contracts are up at the end of the year. And it'll be probably no surprise that the makeup of that squad will change significantly next year. So this year is very much about trying to do as well as they possibly can do.
They do look very much like Warrington did this, last year as the season went on. It was harder and harder for them to coalesce a group of people, most of whom knew they weren't going to be there this year. Castleford have got the same issue, that a lot of players who are coming out of contracts at the end of the season. You just look at the way both teams are playing at the moment, and never having been a player or understood what it's like to have your livelihood questioned, I don't know how easy it is to all be singing off the same hymn sheet, but it can't be, as a coach, an easy environment to get your message across.
No, probably not.
Especially the coach already told some of them that he doesn't rate them, and they're not going to be there next year.
I don't imagine those conversations will have taken place yet. I think you'd be foolish if you did.
I suspect agents are pushing for answers on...
Probably.
Because they need to know by May the 1st.
If you're a coach and you're saying, players need to prove themselves, don't they? And then, they make the decision easier for the club. So, looking at Castleville and looking at Hull, they both put in good performances the week before, and then they both put in poor performances this week. So, again, it's what we said about consistency, or rather inconsistency. Mm-hmm. And those teams that are probably going to finish lower down the table are going to be more inconsistent.
Well, Wakefield are consistent, and it's got a bit of a feeling at the minute of Halifax 2003, especially with the half built stand. At least it's going to get finished, but it is a concern. But Hawkeye are good.
I think the concern is that was again on paper, a winnable game for Wakefield before it kicked off. You got Hull KR, who were out, start to go a little bit out of form. They'd lost three on the trot, and they'd come back from the south of France. You would have thought that, if Wakefield were going to put on their first win, that would be an ideal opportunity to do it. And again, I'm not sure because I didn't see the game, but I never felt, with what was coming through and trying to follow it as it unfolded, that they were in control of it. They looked like they were going to win it. And again, it's a margin of defeat that hints at something more than it's just the quality of the opposition that they played. Maybe that's harsh on Hull KR, and they were exceptionally good.
But two loanees already in. That's a fullback only playing his second game. So obviously you've got players in positions they're not used to playing in at the Super League level.
And loanees who are coming in from the academy of other Super League teams. So.
And you've got a change in coaches again, haven't you? You've got a new assistant coach that's new into the club. I mean, clearly, the head coach is not new to them, but he'll be putting his own stamp on that squad, because that ultimately is why they made the coaching change at the end of last year. So things will have changed behind the scenes, and it's how your players adjust to that as well, isn't it? But that Wakefield-Castleford game sounds like we're talking about quality of games. That might not be the best quality game.
It's kind of going to change it, because there might be some rain in Castleford.
Well, I remember refereeing a game at Easter, the Wakefield-Castleford game a few years ago, and it was freezing and it was pouring with rain. I think it was the game where I think Daryl Powell was looking out of the UPVC window to see the action, because he couldn't see because of the rain on the window. But that was a good game. I think we ended up with a 2 point or a 1 point margin or something like that. So people have got to look forward to that at Easter in a couple of weeks.
Sometimes the games you expect to be rubbish turn out to be great, and sometimes they also turn out to be rubbish as well. So the final game we have two games in Super League. Sorry, on the telly, Wigan beating Salford. Come to Castle.
Your game of the week.
I thought it was a tremendous game. Yeah, it really was. The test for me is if I'm watching a game and I'm hooked by it. That's a good game, because as a referee you see so much rugby and you overanalyze things, which takes out the fun of often what you're watching, because you end up sort of refereeing the game from the sofa. But for me, I thought it was tremendous. We had how many one-on-one ball steals?
Yeah.
We had outrageous dummies and wonderful tries. I think was it. Jai Field jumped from like a leaping salmon from the field to knock a ball back in play, which was tremendous. I thought it was a great entertainment. It didn't have the points that Saturday's game had, but I thought the quality was there, and you just see the sort of brilliance of individual players like French and the field.
Wigan's tactical change as well, just as Salford was starting to wane, putting Field up into the line, bringing French into fullback, and again, you know, taking Cust off, and the coach not being apologetic for it, but just saying, oh, it wasn't his night. You know, that to me, that was another measure of Matty Pete's development as a coach and why he has been so good for this Wigan team. Patience, again, all coaches want patience. For 70 minutes, it probably was Salford's game. They were a bit unlucky with the injuries that they had and running out of players. But Wigan found something when it mattered. And again, that storyline, they're always behind, are they going to do it? Can they possibly do it? Fans are getting a bit nervy in the stands because they think they might be seeing the team get defeated at home, and then they find a way to win it. It was a really entertaining game.
As Richard really says, sort of a sign of a quality team often that may not necessarily perform to the best, but actually found a way to win, which is what Wigan did. But fairness to Salford, I thought Brierley had a great game. You know, a really good first try from that grubber kick into the corner, which was just an imaginative piece of play. And I think that's why Salford are really good to watch, because nobody quite knows what they're going to do next.
Well, that's what Huddersfield need, a bit of Salford.
Yeah.
That everybody billed it beforehand as the contrasting styles, that, you know, Wigan are very much, let's keep building pressure and then see what comes at the end of it. And Salford is, if it's on, we'll just play. Yeah. And have that innate belief in each other that if somebody makes a break or can see a pass on, that they need to support it. Yeah. I think Field's tackle on Joe Burgess was another incident in that game that summed it up. You know, had Burgess managed to get round him, Salford win the game. The fact that Field read it so well and made an absolutely beautiful one-on-one tackle to halt it, Wigan are still in the game and then go on and win it.
You're right, but I think that came off a kick where Wigan couldn't get out of their own 20. Mm. They only made it halfway, and then Brierley put the pass into Burgess, and they attacked from 50 metres out.
A rich, beautiful flat pass.
Absolutely, it was great. I thought that was fantastic. And I mean, not just their attack, Salford's defence at the start of the second half. They defended four successive sets from Wigan. So, you know, people sort of wax lyrical about their attack, but actually, the defence was equally as good.
There's a man playing with technology here.
It's all right. It appears we've gone off YouTube, but let's not talk about rugby league. Warrington, Castleford is where I should start with. What a difference a week makes. Last week, Andy Lass in the dressing room giving it all this, and now they lose 38-0 to Warrington. Now, currently, Warrington are quite good, I understand, but that is quite some turnaround in results from week one to week two.
But is that... I don't know. I mean, this probably sounds stupid, but they probably wouldn't have earmarked that as a win, would they?
No.
And, you know, I'm a big believer in psychology and the importance of it in sport. And I wonder whether... Having said that, they were at St Helens the week before. No, they weren't. I'm mixing them up with Hull. Where were they the week before? And they won at home against Leeds. So, yeah, that makes sense in that they've got their local rivals, who they always want to beat, at home.
Yeah.
And then they're playing Warrington, who perhaps they're probably less favoured. Now, I don't know whether that does play a part. Perhaps consciously it doesn't, but subconsciously may. But who do they play this week, Castleford?
Go to Catalan.
Yeah, well, that's not going to be easy, is it?
No. I think it's the nil. I think at home, you need to give your fans something. And yes, Warrington are good, and yes, they're powerful. And you're right that there's a psychological high when you've beaten your nearest and not so dearest. Mm. Because you've got off the mark, and there's a little bit of pressure off. And Andy Last is hearing all the players say, you know, that we know what we want to be and how we want to be it, and he's the man to take us forward. And then you think, right, well, we'll build on that. And actually, you don't. You go backwards again. That would be the worry for me if I was a Castleford fan or part of their coaching staff. For Warrington, it's remorseless. You know, to play well at Weldon Road, you just need to play up the middle with your big pack doing everything they can to dominate the opposition. And they've got all of that at the moment. They look a really well-balanced team. But say to do it without Josh Drinkwater, who normally in that sort of smaller ground, his kicking game would be absolutely ridiculously advantageous. That just says something about where Warrington are at the moment and the level that they're playing at. So Easter's going to be really interesting because they get Wigan and Saints over Easter.
Yeah, and I think non-Warrington people are sort of waiting for that, aren't they? They're almost hoping that they will lose so they can say it's not Warrington's year. But yeah, that's going to be the test, isn't it? And it's never easy over Easter anyway, is it? But
it's reaction, and that's what Steve McNamara was saying, that it's not about losing your first game. You know at some point you're going to lose. It's how you react to it. But
confidence breeds confidence, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, you get on a roll, and it's the same as a referee, really, I suppose. There will be times in your career as a player or as a referee or any sports person where you think, actually, there's almost nothing you can do wrong because everything you kind of touch comes off.
Yep.
And people talk about creating your own look. Maybe there is an element of that, but I just think it's about confidence. There's no doubt they're playing with confidence at the moment. As you said, the challenge will come when inevitably they do lose. Because I think there's very few teams will go through Super League unbeaten.
And they're taking big away followings. I think was there a couple of thousand there at Castleford on Friday night?
I think it was their highest away attendance.
Their highest away attendance at Cass.
Yeah.
Which again just says something about the buy-in. You know, when the season kicked off 6 weeks ago, there was a real scepticism amongst Warrington fans. Like, you've sold us this dream. Can you deliver? Because, you know, we're the ones that have to go to everybody's ground and take the mocking songs. Yeah. And it starts well, and suddenly within 6 weeks they're taking a record attendance to Castleford. There again clearly is something that the Warrington fans are seeing that they're completely buying into. Mm. I'm pleased for Darryl Powell because I think the way he wants to play the game and a season that he had last year that he's not used to having, to have come out of that the other side with the team that he wants playing the way that he wants so quickly at the start of a season, I think that's a testament to him.
Yeah, I think,
and I'm pleased for him because
things can change so quickly, though. So I think I'm sure Warrington won't be behind the scenes. They won't be getting carried away, and it'll be that, you know, looking at next week and who they play next week, and it becomes boring. Yes, but that is what teams do. That they will only focus on what's coming up.
Successful
the week.
Teams,
yeah, though. Absolutely. Because they'll look at the performance, and there'll be things that they'll have done at Castleford that they won't be happy with.
Mm-hmm.
The things that they'll need to improve going into this week, and those are the areas they'll focus on, as well as what they've been doing well on. And that's how you build performances week to week without focusing too much on the end goal.
I just think the nil for Cass is a real worry.
Mm. We mentioned Thomas McKayley leaving earlier, didn't we?
Yes.
You don't think it'd be not a massive hole to fill? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, I think he started the season really, really well. In fact, in the first game, it was noticeable that all of the focus of attention rightly was on Paul Vaughan, but McKayley wasn't that far behind him in the impact that he had. And I think he's been really consistent. And, Cassiano, I think, picked up a ban in this round of disciplinary. So it's great to have a McKayley type to come in. And they can fill the gaps. So it's going to leave a hole. Whether they think they've got enough with, James Harrison was injured, wasn't he? I don't know how long he's out for. They are going to have to look at how they fill that. And it's a blow. But, you know, he has family that want to go back to Australia. Gold Coast have come in and said that they need a prop. They've got an injury and they need to cover it. And so I think Saturday will be his last game. It will be a blow, but not a fatal one, that's for sure.
On the last video, which I've now lost the live chat for, we were asked about the rumours from Australia that apparently there's going to be a Four Nations tournament down there because they've rediscovered international rugby, which is going to involve Tonga, but...
It's not.
Steve Mascord,
it's not.
Put a story out early saying it's not going to... Tonga are coming here. So
yes.
Don't panic.
Yeah, my understanding is it's a three-match test series against Tonga here.
Yeah, Tonga may or may not be asked to play in that Four Nations, but they reckon that financially and in terms of developing their team, it is far better that they come here and play a three-match series. So if there is a Four Nations... they very well could be and perhaps should be in the Southern Hemisphere. It will involve either Fiji or PNG along with Samoa and New Zealand and Australia. It won't be Tonga. They are earmarked to come here. They may play Samoa in a warm-up game before they come over here.
And they can sell a load of shirts over here. If they bring them with them, make sure you bring them.
But we need that. I mean, I know that it's not within the realms of the RFL to announce that at the moment, but we could do with, you know, the venues being announced for that sooner rather than later.
If you had one, I don't know how much 1.6 million Australian dollars is, but I think if I were running, are they called Rugby Australia? Because that's the kind of thing they call themselves, isn't it? I can think of better ways of spending 1.6 million to build my sport than signing one player, but I'm not Rugby Australia, so...
I just don't know how they'll ever get that money back, because clearly I don't know who he would play for in the domestic competition, but I'm not sure that that is an investment other than out of sheer panic.
The Waratahs or the Brumby, they're the only teams, the Reds.
But they only play about 7 or 8 games a year. So if you divide $1.6 million by that, it's a hell of an investment with no degree of certainty. I don't know anything about rugby union, but I'm not sure an outside back is going to solve your problem.
They've just discovered scoring tries in the corner.
Right.
So,
right.
Tom Johnson's not injured either. That's good news from Saturday.
He wasn't shot by a sniper.
No, he just fell over.
Cramp.
Thank goodness for that. So the Super League fixtures this week. Lee Wigan on Thursday night on the telly.
Watch that if you can.
Friday, Hull County Leeds on the telly. Saints Wakefield not on the telly. So that's a shame, isn't it? I remember commentating on the Saints Wakefield game on my own because nobody else was there. The referee gave a penalty try and Wakefield won, which so thanks for that for James. That was really nice of you doing.
Was it you?
Oh yeah, it was me. Yeah, it was.
Because we had a great discussion once on back in the Radio Yorkshire days of how Wakefield always lost when you were in charge, which people forgot was because Wakefield were rubbish rather than it being.
Oh yeah, no, it was often quoted to me by people involved at Wakefield as well. Mm. But I mean, yeah, absolutely right. Forgetting that. What's their win percentage in Super League? You know,
I feel seen now. On Saturday, Catalans Castle, which I'm guessing is not on telly over here, but it's in.
It was very interesting. Now they're taking again matches that are on Sky, but L'Equipe have took coverage of Saturday, and again they've got 6.5 million Twitter followers, and they were showing the highlights, the French commentary of all the tries, not just the Dragons tries, and. Yeah, it's great, and that's being shown in Spain as well on TV3 for the first time. So yeah, no, that game won't be, which is a shame. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the Dragons respond to defeat, as Steve McNamara said.
The Spanish will be able to get a grip on rugby league really easily because that's where 3-2-1 came from. And if you can understand the rules of 3-2-1, you can understand the rules of rugby league. One for the teenagers. On Channel 4, Warrington Hull FC Sunday, Salford versus Huddersfield.
That'll be a good game. That will be interesting because that'll be a measure of two teams, again, that play in a completely different way. Salford will be looking to score on as many opportunities as they can, and can they break down the process?
Didn't they play in the playoffs last year at Huddersfield? Was that Huddersfield against Salford? The same weekend.
Or was that the year before?
No, I think Huddersfield played at home in the opening round of the playoffs last year. Because I remember Catalan against Leeds, which was like World War III.
Yes,
probably the hardest game I've ever done in Super League. And then the following day was a tremendous game, completely different game, really. And you know, it was one of those games when I was watching it, I'm thinking, why didn't I get to referee this game? Because this was far easier than the game I got to referee.
In the unpredictable championship, which has reached round 7 already, Featherstone Rovers remain unbeaten. Their fans are not happy, but they won 46-4 over York. Well done, Featherstone. I'll be there on Thursday. Toulouse lost to the Sheffield Eagles. The mighty Eagles, 32-4.
Again, the manner of Eagles victory. They're starting to now be seen for what they are, and that is a team that has a genuine chance of upsetting the apple cart this year.
I don't know if they've signed a lot of different players this year, but...
They've signed a lot, and they've put them on longish contracts as well. They've got a new backer who apparently is extremely wealthy and likes the IMG proposals because he can see that there could be a return on the kind of investment.
Well, they're not going to be able to play at that ground in Super League, are they? They're not going to get a licence there.
But there is ground around it that can be developed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with performances and results like that, you know, you cannot take them for granted anymore.
No, they're obviously playing well.
Dream big. One day the Eagles wheelchair team complete the arena. Get in there. Barrow beat Halifax 16-12 in another surprise result.
Barrow's first one in the season.
Indeed. And they go above Newcastle on points difference. Newcastle losing at Widnes 24-16. A game in which I saw John Keir quoted as saying it was a fake win.
Well, Widnes were hanging on at the end. That is for sure.
Whitehaven lost to the Bulldogs 16-18.
I must say, I listened to that yesterday afternoon on Radio Cumbria, and I have to compliment their commentary. Incredibly passionate, really knowledgeable, great excitement, a game that went down literally to the last play, and it was a pleasure to listen to the Radio Cumbria commentary of that.
London beat Swinton in another close game, 16-14, coming from behind at half time in that one, so a big result for London. And of course, the Cougars beating Bradford. And it's not just that they beat Bradford, it's the scoreline there. 24-0 up at half time, 34-6 at the close. I have read some comments that perhaps Bradford having to fit in the lone players from Leeds didn't help, but. Do they have to take players on loan?
They had them the week before and it didn't seem to do them any harm.
excuses. But Keith Lee, big winners. Luke Gale's got a try. He's famous. And that is their first win over Bradford since 1970-something. 3-7. Good start to their life back in the Championship.
It's how they back it up this week. But again, that as we're told, was a fantastic occasion.
I think you're looking at the squad that I wouldn't have predicted that they would be at the bottom end of the Championship, to be honest. I would have thought that they would be mid-table-ish, something like that. They've invested, you know, into that squad. So I think, you know, Newcastle and Barrow towards the bottom end, they look like they're going to struggle this year. And Swinton are towards the bottom, aren't they? Mm.
But then, as we've said, for time immemorial, if you have distributions in the league that are dependent on where you finished the year before, the top will always be towards the top, the bottom. There's exceptions, because clearly Batley have cut their budget even though they've made a grand final, and Keighley have had investors that have probably put more in than merely they would be getting from central distribution. But whatever the change is in terms of licensing and how that works and who ends up where, I do hope that the central distribution in the Championship going forward is equal, because I think you'll have an even better competition if it is.
I suppose the devil's advocate argument would be, how do you reward performance? Do you reward performance by giving them extra prize money?
Yes, absolutely. You have two competitions, the 1895 Cup and a Championship Grand Final that has prize money attached to it, the winner take all. But for your league season, whereby there isn't an automatic promotion or relegation at the end of it, if you're moving into a licensing era, clubs should start on a level playing field, and that makes that competition even better. It's clearly good at the moment, but it's not a surprise that, you know, Swinton and Barrow might struggle if they've got maybe half to a quarter of the money that other clubs at the top end of the division have got.
What was Barrow's crowd? Because Barrow have been getting some good crowds.
1,879.
Yeah.
In fact, all the crowds in the Championship were pretty good, actually. I think even allowing for the fact that we had the BD Derby, you know, almost 2,000 at Barrow, almost 3,000 at Featherstone, almost 5,000 at Keighley, 1,000 at Sheffield, which, again, from where they've been and with the facility they've got, is not a bad effort at all. 1,000 at Whitehaven, and nearly 3,000 at Widnes. You know, that's sustainable.
And it probably correlates with I'm assuming the attendances are probably up in Super League as well. Whether that comes off the back of the World Cup, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was looking for the women's results in the paper and I can't find them, so I've had to go on to the RFL website. So I'll come to those in a moment. Kerry Nass is Riley Dean back at Featherstone. Yes, he is.
Yes, he was this week. Yeah.
Oh, I should have just asked you and not had to look through the paper. Losing Kieran Gill earlier and having a reshuffle in the left edge cost them dear, we say, is badger. Luke Gill dominated down that left edge for the last part of the first half and it killed Bradford. My first time at Cougar Park, can't help but think it would be improved with a working clock, never mind a big screen. Oh, plenty.
I think they had a power outage, didn't they? Because Radio Leeds should have been commentating from that, and it ended up being, I'm assuming, off his mobile phone as just updates.
There must have been too many people pulling pints.
Reporting on mobile phone.
Putting pies in the microwave.
It takes me back to the old Blue days. In the Women's Championship, before I get to League One, because I've got it in front of me, Hull KR beat Swinton 58-6. They're going well at the start of the season now, the Rovers. Alton Raid, that's the champions last year, of course, beat Warrington's reserves 20 points to 14. Hull beat Wakefield 28-0.
That's the rustle of a biscuit, man.
A biscuit. Stanley beat Sheffield Eagles. And Dewsbury Moore, who also started the season well, won away at Widnes. It's the launch of the Women's Super League tomorrow. Content to follow. I don't know who we're going to speak to. So stay tuned and find out over the next few days, because I generally don't know who I'm going to speak to.
I don't have to watch him, but it's another Tunnocks coming our way.
The good people at Tunnocks. You have to tag him in to a tweet.
At Tunnocks.
Unfortunately, says Badger Badger, the power cut didn't stop the Robbie Williams tribute act at half time. I thought, surely Keith, they come on last week with their big audition, they've got the actual Robbie Williams in. Surely, surely, surely. Let's wait for Lady Gaga at the grand final. I mean, we are going to get some. The problem with the grand final entertainment last year was it was a DJ who used to be on the BBC niche radio station for hipsters.
Not me then.
No. So, you know,
you agreed with that far too readily, by the way. Well, when I said not me then. No.
There's nothing wrong with not being a hipster. Hipsters are bad people.
But actually, the crowds for the grand finals are generally not that bad.
Yeah. Mm.
It's probably post-COVID where they've dropped. And then it depends on the teams. But what the competition really needs is that game should sell out irrespective of which teams are in.
Exactly.
And that game really should sell out in advance of the final, and in advance of the finalists being known. And that's where the sport needs to get to, that people just want to go to the grand final.
And one of the things is you announce it well in advance who you're going to see, as well as the two teams. So, you know, if it is, tell me who was doing the NFL Grand. Was it Rihanna?
Rihanna.
But if you know you're getting somebody of that name, you don't wait until the day before and tell people. You might buy a ticket because Lady Gaga is doing the pre-match entertainment.
Well, people would. There's no doubt about that. More neutrals would definitely buy tickets for events like that. It's just whether you'd recoup that money.
Do we go with if the Challenge Cup final is going to have three games in one day, which is going to be a stretch for the neutral, but still. Do you sell that as the big rugby league's big day out? You know, Rugby Union has their big games at Twickenham or whatever. I think they played one at Spurs this week as well.
Well, particularly if the Magic and weekend is going, and the Summer Bash is going with the IMG plans, and it is Rugby League's big day out. But traditionally it has been, hasn't it? You see lots of neutral people wearing their own shirts. So, and I guess that's what we need to go back to. But they've thrown enough games now at that competition to try and sell it out. And I think Wembley is such a big stadium to pack out. It's almost a little bit too big for Rugby League. But that's probably the event where you do need a big name, you know, entertainment draw for people.
Let's bring back the community singing.
There's no room. We've got the schools final as well. He's back at Wembley this year, so there's no time for anything to be done.
But there's a huge stadium with 90,000 seats. You don't need to have it on the pitch,
absolutely,
do you? And certainly Lee are not doing that, are they? I think that's in the back of the stand and in the grand final. You have it in the corner. Yeah. Magic Weekend's the same. So you just need a section of that stadium which you dedicate to some entertainment.
Just not a DJ, because it's just cheap, and apart from Leeds doing it next week, but that's different, because that's a regular home season game, not a grand final. League One, congratulations Cornwall. They've won their first ever home fixture in front of a crowd of not given. 35-10 over London Scholars. As you were saying downstairs, Phil, it's great for Cornwall, but they've beaten London Scholars, who were bottom of the table, and
yeah, I think there's still talk of this takeover at the Scholars. It seems
not like the takeover at Salford.
Seems to me that it needs to happen sooner rather than later. Because, again, all of these teams know that there is a potential limited shelf life on what they're doing. And there are those at the top that are scrabbling to be in the Championship when licences come. And, again, Dewsbury have had another big win, and Doncaster undefeated. But, you know, and Midlands Hurricanes are clearly improving. They're pushing more teams this year. You know, Cornwall and London need to know what the future is, but also how well equipped are they to face it.
The Midlands incremental gains, losing 38-28 to Workington,
whose winger scored five tries, deserves a mention.
Sabuti. I'm sure I've pronounced that incorrectly. Apologies, Warrington. Workington. Close enough. Batley. Reading the bottom end of the last week's results, also in League One, because it's a lopsided table, I'm confused. North Wales 4, Oldham 18, obviously boosted by the news that George Ford might play them for them in 20 years' time. I've never seen, I don't know how good he is, I've never seen him play, I just know he's Mike Ford's son. But North Wales with 0 from 4, which is surprising. And Rochdale, as you say, heavily beaten by Dewsbury, 52-4. So Rochdale only winning one of their three games so far. It is a lopsided table. Cornwall have only played two games, so it is very confusing as to
and that's difficult for teams as well. If you can't get continuity from week to week, then as a coach, it must be really, really hard. But yeah, you'll be pleased that that Dewsbury are top of
the honestly couldn't care less. Which sounds
no,
that might sound awful for Dewsbury, but I mean, as a you know, yes, it was my hometown team, and it's the team I watched as a child. But you know, long lost interest really in Dewsbury. But it, you
what
know, nevertheless,
you, what would tempt you a Sunday afternoon? You,
I mean,
you're,
Paul,
you're free.
Still been playing it wouldn't.
Well, no, Liam Finn coaching, top of the league. What could they do to take you? It's not a bad facility.
No, no, and it's not a reflection on the club or the people that are there or the stadium or whatever. It's just it doesn't matter what team it would have been as a child. That team for me doesn't have an interest anymore as it would do as a child. So, but nevertheless, it's you know. I am originally from Dewsbury. My parents still live there, and my family still live there. So, it's good for the town to see them doing well in League One. No doubt about that.
Challenge Cup this week, which means a lot of teams get byes in the league. Keighley at home to North Wales on Saturday. London Broncos take on Doncaster at Rosslyn Park. Is that who Martin Afire played for?
He did.
That's their most famous son. And is he still selling electric cars on the telly? Maybe soon.
It's Ellery Hanley's birthday today, by the way.
There you go. Another Hall of Famer. Not everybody plays on Question of Sport yet. When's Tom Halliwell going to be on there? And
we had some players last year. Rugby League plays on Question of Sport.
This is the new series now, so we're starting again with our campaign to get people back on the telly.
I was on it, but that doesn't count because I'm not a player.
Most watched episode, I hear.
Was it? Oh, I don't know. Like
that. What's got on Top Gear? You know, you could go on that this year. Rochdale Mayfield versus Newcastle Thunder.
That'd be interesting. Bearing in mind that Mayfield beat Cornwall and Thunder are not in great form.
Sunday, Dewsbury Witness. And of course, teams are looking at this now as a.
So you go to that, wouldn't you? Cup tie Dewsbury.
No, I don't think
bring back the old days?
No.
Teams looking at this now, getting closer to the 1895 cut-off thing. So Widnes going to Dewsbury, obviously you mentioned Dewsbury being informed, but John Keir, Wembley, Cup Magic, blah, 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 and all that. So Halifax versus Barrow, same theory. Hunslet...
Who played this week?
Of course, the reverse fixture. Hunslet Amateurs versus Batley.
Which has been played at Batley because they won't allow it to be played at Hunslet.
Amateur rugby league.
What is that club? Is that the old?
It's the merger of the Warriors and the Parkside.
Oh, okay.
They're the super club. Right. Now.
Why are they still called ARLFC when they're community clubs? Why are they CRLFC? I've mentioned this before.
I don't know why the professional club is RLFC and the amateur club is ARLFC because outside of Hunslet, you would not know the difference.
Midlands versus Bradford in Bradford, at the old source. Hopefully, Midlands have been practicing on a tiny pitch this week for that one. And all these people signing off Wakefield's pitch. Oh, what a load of nonsense that was as well. That was great for the media again, wasn't it? Monday, is the game going to be off? Tuesday, is the game going to be off? Tuesday later, oh, it's on.
I refereed the second game back at Oddsall. Was it last year? I can't remember the year before. I'm losing track of the years. But it was ridiculous. absolutely ridiculous. Like, I've been on far better park pitches than that. It was... They changed the dimensions of the pitch, I think, after those first couple of games. So they made it slightly wider, but slightly shorter. But outrageous, really, that it was allowed to be played on in those dimensions. And I appreciate it was the same for both teams.
Yeah, I think the RFL contacted the landlord, who was the RFL, and said the game could go.
Yeah, well, we talk about conflict of interest. that probably sounds like a conflict of interest. But, you know, I appreciate, you know, they want to try and encourage teams to play in their, you know, their hometown instead of Bradford playing at Dewsbury, which wasn't ideal either. I get that, but you know, signing that deal with the trucks, what are they called?
Monster trucks.
When do you get a monster truck on the pitch?
Perhaps was a little bit short sighted because you know, the dimensions of the pitch were probably an afterthought.
These are to represent Bradford's massive goalposts, which they made a big thing about. Was that a world record as well?
Oh, I would imagine so. Yeah.
World record. It's going to be a world record crowd for Midlands versus Bradford this week. So well done to them. And York versus Sheffield Eagles.
That'd be interesting. Andrew Henderson derby.
Is it on the BBC or the Sportsman? It's on one of them, I think. He hasn't said on here which is the BBC game, which is annoying.
I think they've only just announced it.
I tell you what, as much as the RFL gets a lot of the stick, sometimes justified, sometimes not, just in case they're listening, which we know they are. the Football Association haven't announced which FA Cup semi-finals could be on which day yet. And they have had a week since the quarter-finals.
And they made a mistake of taking him to Wembley, didn't
they? Well, my mate's a Blades fan. He's trying to gamble on which day to get train tickets to go to in London for, but he's only just go stay in a casino all night. And just
that was interesting, though, that they did both rounds drawn at the same time. I don't know why they did that. But because I always think the next round draw generates it's interest exciting, for that. Yeah. I don't know why they did that.
Yeah. Well, they always used to be on a Monday as well afterwards, and you'd crowd round the radio at 6:15 or whenever it might have been to
Spanish football in the Copa del Rey, I believe, or they used to do, they draw all the rounds out from round one at the same time.
No sense of adventure.
I suppose it's a bit like tennis, you know, when you go to see Wimbledon, you see it on the big board, don't you? You see the draw, basically. Yeah. Right? But I think by doing a draw round by round, you generate interest for the subsequent round.
And I don't think they should give you the numbers on the balls beforehand either, because the joy used to be when you had a little transistor radio. You didn't know what number your team... You were trying to work out alphabetically, I know it's going to be in the middle and it might be 11. Oh, no, it could be 12, because Lee was 11. You didn't know in advance. Look out for balls. No, I don't want to look
words.
Out.
You see, there's so many words at the bottom.
You see, before the days of the internet, you'd listen to the radio, wouldn't you, and you'd write them all down. The numbers down. I remember doing this as a kid. You'd write the numbers down, because... You know, SCOE's CFAX couldn't keep up, could it? Couldn't keep up with that. Those were the days, huh?
Leeds must have played well this week. He texted me at the full time.
Oh, he can text, can he?
Yeah.
What was his reaction? while you find it...
Bloody marvellous.
Badger says he believes York are on the BBC and Dewsbury Witness are on the Sportsman. So, thanks, Badger, doing our jobs for us. And, it should be in the paper.
Has he got Wi-Fi yet?
His initial reaction was great win, great character, sensational.
What did he say at half time?
He didn't text that.
Oh, bloody rubbish.
Bloody rubbish.
Is there anything else we need to talk about? Is that it? Have we done? Is there anything else that's happening with the league this week? I mean, I've got to look at the paper.
No, I think we've covered virtually everything.
So next week.
Yes, next week we're live.
We're not here. Well, we are here.
We're at Headingley.
This is news to me.
Yeah.
We're off the Headingley. We're off to Headingley because they're celebrating some of the great number 10s in history.
Do I need to take a tin hat with me?
No, you'll be fine. They love you. Steve Pitchford, Barry McDermott, Jamie Peacock, and Danica Preen.
Oh, very fair.
Being interviewed by JJB. So I thought... I think we're going to try and get along there for 6 and do our show before it and then maybe interview some of them afterwards.
Dancing in front of the South Stand.
Who was?
Danica.
Oh, sorry.
Not Lee the Rhino. Have you not seen it's all over the TikTok and the Instagram?
I haven't got TikTok.
I know you haven't, but it's just... It's shocking. Shocking behaviour. These pundits, they should be all neutral.
I thought it worked on Channel 4 that clearly Sam Tompkins was taking the Catalan angle and he is very, very good.
Yes. I'm not sure that I'll be watching a comedy show with Adam Hills and Helen Skelton doing two-handers because that didn't work at the start. That wasn't great.
Didn't sir. But then Danica having the Leeds perspective, it's quite relaxed between them all, it really works.
I think that's I need to. I'm not starting writing my column yet, so I better write something. But
you better add.
I know. I think that's part of the standing pitch side thing because if you're sat in a studio, well, we're sat here and we're behind a desk. And you imagine that's what Sky are every week, aren't they? They're sat behind in their studio, they've got a table there. You're kind of confined. Whereas you can move around and here's someone coming in from here and here's somebody else coming in. And it does feel, it's within a minute of its broadcast, everything's planned. But it doesn't feel that way because here's Ron Smith coming in, here's whoever else is going to turn up. It does feel very free, which... I think helps it.
It was good. Enjoyed it.
Ashton Gordon was good actually.
Very good.
As his summariser on the Friday game, wasn't it?
And he's on the Super League show as well now, which is...
Just offered a slightly different perspective, I thought. Something slightly different.
Players are great. Current players are great. They're really good. So, Sam was good.
Well, he's got a media... Didn't Sky sign him up years ago before he went to the NRL and made a big thing about signing him up as a pundit and then he went to the NRL and then... But he's back now, and that'll be on there next year.
Mm-hmm.
If they sign the deal. We've got a deal with next year.
No news yet.
Otherwise, he might be eating pies on.
We were last told that Sky were concentrating on the EFL football deal, yes. And when they had negotiated that and their part in it, then they would look at rugby league next.
Our leads are not in crisis anymore. Kevin.
Come on, they will be next week, won't they? Clearly. But they're not this week.
But congratulations, Warrington. Lineal champions of the world. We'll see if they can defend that on Channel 4 this week. And that's what they.
So Hull could be world champions.
Yeah, Adam Hills needs to mention that. Someone needs to get.
Adam, who does he support?
Exactly. Someone needs to get the message to Channel 4. Do we know anyone at Channel 4?
I think we do.
I keep forgetting. I was in the dark, so I was expecting Mark to turn up. He wasn't on me. Right, we're done. We'll see you next week, live from Henley. Fingers crossed if we get the Wi-Fi working. Do you know the passcode? That's okay.
It's normally pretty good.
I think I still get the one at Wakefield, but don't tell them. So we'll be back next week. Thank you for watching, and download the podcast. Do all those things. I've forgotten my mouse. I've got to press it manually.